You're listening to Bob Gross and Tom.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Hour number three of Bob Gross and Tom with Gross and Tom, and now at the hardest working man in show business, John Clayton, who is fighting sleep deprivation in London and on like his sixth show in the last 2 hours. Hello, John.
Hello, guys. How are you?
For a minute there, I thought you had nodded off.
No. It's like I'm wide awake here.
All right. Well, we were just fumbling around last segment, John, trying to figure out who's healthy, who isn't. I heard something about Deion Jordan. You want to start there?
Yeah, it seemed like he missed practice today. Pete really didn't say much about it. You know, he's been fighting a couple injuries. You know, the knee's always been an issue. He's had some hamstrings and all that stuff. And you would hope he's going to be able to play because they need the pass rush. Because when you really look at the equation, what they've had, like 10 sacks in the first five games. Frank Clark has three. They've had a couple blitzes that have been able to get in there. But who's that number two guy? And as much as they'd like to get Barkevious Mingo the chance to put his hand in the ground and rush, that's hard to do when their best two linebackers with K.J. Wright out are going to be Mingo and Bobby Wagner. And so you don't have the luxury of doing that. And so who is that next guy? Is it Quentin Jefferson? Or, you know, they just don't know at this stage. And so they really do need Deion Jordan. And so far, in the three games that he's played, he's not been able to do more than 20 plays. So that's a big issue. It's something I think that they have to study as far as acquisitions and trades or personnel or anything like that, because they need more pass rush. And certainly against Derek Carr, and an offensive line that has two rookie tackles, you want to have somebody that can just get that second guy in there and rush, because if not, you can double-team Frank Clark. So if Jordan's not able to go, that's a blow.
John, the Raiders are 1-4, and really, I mean, that was a lucky win against the Browns. They could be 0-5, which is a terrible start, as is 1-4. They obviously gave their own team a gut punch by trading Khalil Mack before the year started, but what have been the biggest problems John Gruden's had in adjusting, or was this to be anticipated because they're really getting the team ready to be good in Vegas?
Well, yeah, I guess, but of course, are they going to be good in Vegas? And what you don't understand, if you want to have a rebuild, why do you do it with old guys? I watched that happen when Matt Millen was the general manager of the Detroit Lions, and of course, I covered Matt when he was at Penn State, when I was at the Pittsburgh Press. Really respected Matt, loved him as a person, a player, a football mind, all those different things. But you never get to be, if you're rebuilding, which he was, you can't be old. And this team is 27-4 as far as their average age. That's almost a year over anybody else in the league, because I think Atlanta might be the next team, you know, embedded in the 26-5, 26-6 range. And so it's like, you just kind of shake your head. And you start the season, you have 15 guys in their 30s. You know, 31 guys that are new to this particular team. And if you're making those kind of changes, are you really making it better? You know, because, I mean, you're letting top draft choices go. They've pretty much started to wipe out a lot of the picks that, you know, Reggie McKenzie thought would be real good ones in trying to build up. I mean, a second-round pick from last year at safety. You know, they took a first-round pick, Carl Joseph, and basically kind of pushed him out the door. I mean, he's, you know, basically now all special teams when he's healthy, and right now he's not 100% healthy. That's Carl Joseph. And so I just kind of wonder, it's like, are you getting any better? Their first-round pick from last year, Conley, is now going to be benched so they can have Daryl Worley, who had his off-the-field problems and a four-game suspension. Now he gets a chance to start. So you get nine guys that are, pretty much new starters on the defense. And one of the carryover guys is Reggie Nelson, who I think is older than, Ozzie Nelson. He's like probably like 80 years old. And so it's like, I just wonder, it's like, what's going on with this team?
John, how many more years do you think Marshawn has left?
I think this is probably going to be it. I'd be surprised if he gets next year. Although the way he's running at 331 yards and the fact that they're not overusing him. I mean, but in the game last week, I think he was only on the field for like 26 plays. Now it needs to be a little bit more. But I think this is pretty much the last year. I mean, it's one where, you know, how long can you kind of stretch this out? And we'll see, because what happens, we watched that happen last year with Adrian Peterson. Now, unfortunately, it hasn't happened this year because Peterson's running real well. You can start off real well, but then you start to fade with age. So far, Marshawn has not faded with his age this year. Peterson did. I mean, he went to Arizona, had a couple good games, and then he just went off the shelf. Now, fortunately, he goes to Washington. He's off to a good start. He fought through a shoulder separation last week. But I still think, you know, you're week to week with an older running back, and you don't know what week that's all going to start to fall apart.
John Clayton with us from London. John, the Raiders arrived, I think, today, a few hours ago. Just judging by your adjustment, what do you think the strategy of arriving so late?
I don't think it's good. I mean, I know that John Gruden, just like Pete Carroll, spent a lot of time talking to different people, seeing what the right way to do it is and the wrong way to do it. But understanding it, that this is one of the rare times where you're going to have both teams in a similar boat. I mean, both had to make eight-hour trips. I mean, a lot of times you could have, let's say, a Charger team playing Tennessee like next week, and the Chargers have to make the eight-hour trip. Tennessee has to make a six-hour trip. And so it's a little bit different. But here's the case where both were in the same boat, and John elected to take the one day later. And I think that that might hurt them a little bit because, you know, Pete kind of called this like a free day because now, you know, they got their work done on Wednesday. They had the walkthrough yesterday. They had the practice today, which is going to be a light one. But, you know, at least they have a chance to kind of base themselves and get settled into this environment and this time level. But right now, the Raiders are still trying to do that, trying to catch up on a day of sleep. So I think, you know, to a small degree, the Seahawks probably did the wiser thing in coming out the day early.
John, I want to jump ahead just a little bit here because there's a couple of guys who are going to be returning at some point. Ed Dixon, J.D. McKissick, we'll see when they both come back. Who do you think... Whose roster spot do you think that they would end up taking? Is Brandon Marshall possibly on the chopping block here?
Yeah, I know that was a discussion this morning on Brock and Salk when Bob Stelton was there. And I think that they were right in thinking, okay, here you got six wide receivers on the team, and basically you have two tight ends and offensive lineman George Fant who's helping out at tight end. And so clearly with Dixon coming back after the bye, then I would have to think that what they're doing is that you know, they'll have to make a roster move, and it's probably going to be a wide receiver. So it's either going to be Brandon Marshall, it could be Keenan Reynolds, but I think that you know, the fact that you can see Marshall dropping down. Now remember, his salary is guaranteed. He's going to make 1.15 because he was on the roster opening day, and so that's not going to change. But you know, I don't think it's an economic issue. I think it's a viability issue, and you know, with the four drops. That dropped all of a sudden Brandon Marshall from being the number three wide receiver to the number, in many ways, it could have been the number two wide receiver because Doug Baldwin was hurt, but then down to the number five wide receiver. So I think he's in jeopardy. And clearly, when J.D. hits back after missing eight games, and you know he'll be back because he'll help out on returns, he can be an emergency wide receiver. I mean, he's very good coming out of the backfield, catching the ball, and can be the third down, passing down type of back. That affects the process. So I think the two guys right now that are on the bubble for those moves would be Marshall and C.J. Prosize. Although the one thing they like about Marshall is that you know, he does have the ability to catch the ball in red zone threat because he's so big. So far, they've only targeted him in the red zone three times, though.
It's hard to keep a wide receiver, like a fourth wide receiver who doesn't play special teams, though, isn't it?
It was funny. Yeah, I'd say yes. But then I started looking at some of the Raiders stuff, and with all the older guys that they have, I mean, they basically have like two different teams. They have the guys that are the starters, particularly the older starters, and most of those guys aren't going to be out there because, and again, I'm talking about, you know, you're not going to have Marshawn out there. I mean, they have like about, I'd say 9 to 10 starters that are basically not involved in special teams, much less in Seattle, much less than any other team on the roster. But no, I agree with you because that's the initial. It is hard if you have a guy that's going to be your fifth wide receiver or fourth wide receiver to keep him when he doesn't play special teams. Now, like Keenan Reynolds, I mean, he can play special teams. That's why if you're Brandon Marshall, you want to, one, get a chance to get in there and play 25 plays this week, and number two, catch some passes and not drop any.
What do you think they should do at the trade deadline, John?
Study for a defensive end, a pass rusher. That's one of their big needs.
Yeah, who's available?
Hard to tell right now because I think what you have to kind of see over the next 2 weeks is that what teams, you know, what one-win teams are going to start to drop down and then start to say, you know what, we might as well sacrifice one or two. And I don't think they've really got to that point yet. I mean, so, like, for example, I mean, you look at, hate to say it, Tom, but your Giants, I mean, not that they have anything to give up. Olivier Vernon, of course, is a defensive end in a 4-3 and a linebacker in a 3-4, but he's had a high ankle sprain and he's only played one game. But who else is there that they could sacrifice? So you can't look at that team. I mean, you know, in Atlanta, well, I mean, they're not going to give up, even though they could be one. But I think what you do is you start to study those one-win teams and see what could go bad.
You think they'll do anything at the end of the day?
You know John Snyder. He's always going to be looking.
Yeah, that's a fact.
And I think that, I mean, there's such a need right now that, I mean, there's just not enough. I mean, you've got Frank Clark. Then who, I mean, name me the number two guy.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's not a quiz question. I think it's a reality question. I mean, you know, again, I'd say it could be Barkevious Mingo, but his need on the linebacking core in passing situations is more while K.J. Wright is out. And then you've got, Quentin Jefferson. And unfortunately, Deion Jordan appeared on the injury list today as questionable. That's got to be a concern. So all those different things are kind of in question right now. But they got to have somebody step up to be the number two. If not, they've got to try to find somebody who can be a number four and push some things up just so they have more numbers.
I don't want to overstate this too much because he's only just come back and it's only been a few games. But do you think that with the emergence of Lockett, does that in any way, and the fact that they're running the ball as much as they are, does that affect Doug Baldwin and the amount of targets he may be getting?
No, not in the least, because Doug has such a unique role on this team. And I don't know exactly what happened in the game Sunday. Maybe it was because of man coverage. Maybe because the knee was slowing him down a little bit. I mean, because I know I was watching his routes, and he just didn't seem to break away like he normally will. And one of the things he's so good at is kind of like what Steve Larkin was able to do, was make those turns, and all of a sudden he gets an extra yard or two where it's, you know, doesn't have to be as tight of a throw, but he's always going to be there. And I, you know, he's like 88 to 89% best in the league last year as far as being targeted and catching the ball. Well, first game back, he was fine. Last week, he wasn't as good, but I still think that, he's still the number one guy because he's the number one guy that, Russell knows can get open on all these different routes, where Lockett's now living up to what they're paying him for to be the number two wide receiver. So I think it's a good combination. And what you like is that, it's now, at least in the case of Lockett, now in the case of David Moore, it's opening up the play action pass. I know one stat that ESPN Stats and Info had that kind of caught me off guard because, again, it was one of the woes of the fans the last couple of weeks. Well, they're not throwing a lot. They're not doing any play-action passes. The number one quarterback right now for quarterback rating with play-action passes is Russell Wilson. It's like 156.3. It's almost perfect. And what you saw last week with the plays that he was able to, you know, go over and make those lob throws to David Moore and to Tyler Lockett, they were beautiful. But that's a byproduct of the running game. If you get the running game going, that thing opens up. So I think that's encouraging.
What kind of a game are you expecting? We're visiting with John Clayton here on 710 ESPN. What kind of a game are you actually expecting on Sunday?
I think a pretty one-sided game because you're looking at a Raider defense that doesn't have playmakers, that's real slow. You can say it's old, but it's getting a little bit younger because some of the older guys are starting to fall back, like the Derek Johnsons and others. They're starting to lose a little bit of steam. But, I mean, the Raiders are giving up 6.8 yards per play. 6.8. Quarterbacks opposing them are getting a quarterback rating of 103. They've, you know, like six sacks. I mean, that's all they have. And three of them are by Bruce Irvin. So if you block Bruce Irvin, then you have a good chance. Then you look on the other side of the ball. You know, they're down two starting offensive linemen. And so they got two rookies starting at tackle. They can be beaten. That's a problem. And so all these things seem to be working against the Raiders. And basically, kind of like you saw, sorry, Tom, like the Giants, they're not a good team. They got a good quarterback, but they're not that, I mean, there's deficiencies on the roster that are so evident. And because of that, you know, I think this should be a one-sided game. Now, again, we've seen it so many times. I mean, most people, maybe me, myself included, thought it was going to be a one-sided game with the Seahawks and the Rams. Turned out to be a great game. So anything can happen, but Seahawks should have a big advantage in this game.
John, did you actually get to watch any of that game last night? Did you watch it later on, see any of the highlights?
I did not know, because flying over the pond, you're not going to be able to catch that satellite connection that's going to give you the live broadcast. And so I did not see, unfortunately, I didn't see any of it, because when I was going through Houston, that just didn't seem to be the right time. But, I mean, because I think it was, when I left, it was like 14-3, but I think the die was already cast in that game. I mean, you can see that it was going to be a pretty one-sided game. And I guess the fortunate thing is, you know, the choice to watch, the Raider preview show. I mean, the Raider, I guess you could say, what's the season judgment show, or what do you want to call it, which was Jurassic World, with the 27.4 years of age that they have in the team. I wanted to see that to kind of compare, you know, which dinosaurs were better and which dinosaurs were worse. So that took precedent, but there was no chance, unfortunately, to be able to see the game. But I think it was fortunate that I didn't get to see much of the game.
Yeah,
it was definitely fortunate.
Well, yeah, let me save you the suspense. It was brutal. It was terrible all the way around. By the way,
I say this because I hate saying Eli Manning is done.
Yeah.
Because I like him so much. He means so much to the game. He's meant so much to the National Football League. But, I mean, he looks done, and I hate saying it.
You know, the funny thing is, though, John, is that when you look at the Seahawks the last couple of years, when they had an offensive line that was playing poorly, you still could rest on the crutch that you had Russell Wilson, who at least could escape, buy himself some time, maybe extend plays, etc. Eli Manning can't do that even for a half second. So how can a team like the Giants fool themselves into believing that the situation would work?
Well, I mean, let's put it this way. Tom Brady can't run.
Yeah, but he's got guys blocking for him.
Eli Manning. Right, but even if they did, it's like if you had a race between Eli Manning and Tom Brady, I mean, first off, it'd be like the same as the eight-hour delay that would have coming across the pond, because it'd be so slow. But what you would see is that Tom would lose that race. But the difference is Tom gets the ball downfield and Eli doesn't. And you heard Odell Beckham's comments that he had to pay a fine for it this week. What he said after the game with Josina Anderson is that I want to beat the cornerback. I want to go over the top. Well, right now, Eli's not going over the top. Too many checkdowns. And when you talk to defensive coordinators, you put a cover two against what he's doing, can't do anything. Nobody's open. And so, in particular, you're forcing all the checkdowns and the low throws and the low percentages. It's bad. I mean, hey, it's nice to be able to get 71% completions, but if the completions are worth nothing, then it's a 1-5 team. And that's bad.
Yeah.
John. And, you know, it's just not getting it done. And unless he shows the ability to throw some deep passes, it's not going to be good.
John, do you actually see the NFL expanding to London?
Expanding, no. I under no circumstance see an expansion, because if you expand, you're now sharing more of the TV revenue and all the revenue that's coming into the league. So I can't see them. And plus, they like the model of 32 teams, because then you have the balance of 8 divisions at 4 teams each. That's a good thing. But the difference is I can see a team maybe like Jacksonville finding some configuration moving over. We talked to Osio Mignola, the former Giants defensive end, who's now a real smart guy. He's back living in London. He's pushing and advocating NFL football over here, and he's doing a great job. He's on TV. He's a great spokesman and all that stuff. He thinks, I mean, again, he has to know something because he's working with the league on this stuff. He says by 2022, that's when a team's going to be in London. And, of course, now stories have come out last week that Shad Khan, the owner of the Jaguars, from ex-employees, now these may be bitter people or whatever, keep on saying, now he's making the move. I don't know if I buy it, because Shad has worked out so many things in the Jacksonville area to try to enhance the team, the finances, and everything else. He's put a lot of money into Jacksonville football, but you know, that could be the team, and maybe they have a configuration where they have four games over here and four games in Jacksonville. We'll see. But I hate to say it, because, again, I just wonder about all the crazy stuff as far as trying to go back with the commutes and all that stuff. I don't know who pays the price. Is it going to be the teams that come here, or the team that's here going across season, having 8 games over with all the 8, 7, 6-hour time delays?
All right, so we think that there's the idea that they're playing these games over in London with the intention of maybe moving a team over there, whether it's expansion or not. But they also play games in Mexico City, What's the goal there? Do they want to eventually have team like multiple teams? Do they want this to be a worldwide thing? Where is it leading?
No, here's where I think, and again, you have to identify the they, because who's the they? Is it the NFL owners? Absolutely not. Is it the NFL players? Absolutely not. Is it the NFL coaches? Absolutely not. Is it the league office? 100%, because you have guys in the league office that are advocating can try to do two things. One, get a team to London, because what they think they can do is enhance what's going on the sponsorship market and pick up more money in that, because sponsorship market in soccer is huge. The way that they can generate money and all that stuff, and they think they can make a lot of money that way. What the other thing would be was expand from 16 games, and whether it's going to be, if you want to have 17, then what you do is you have 16 international games, and each team, because you still have the balance with the 8 home games and 8 away games, and then 1 international games. Those are the two things that I think they want to do. But and the priority list, and again, this is the league, not anybody else. The league would like to be able to have, just a team here in London, and then all their other games to be international games.
John, we appreciate you doing this.
You're a trooper.
Get yourself some sleep, buddy.
I'm almost there. One more thing to finish, and then I can get some naps.
All right, bud, and we'll talk to you again on...
And unfortunately, no show tomorrow.
Right.
So right.
I'll be back on Tuesday.
Tuesday it is, John. Have a great time.
Yep, there he goes. What do you think about that? The expansion overall? Do you think they want it to just be worldwide? What is it about London? I mean, why London? Why not Paris or Munich or whoever? Because like you said...
Time zone difference. It's a little closer.
Is it that much... Across Europe, how many time zones are we dealing with? Is it like is it three?
It's one time zone to Paris.
Okay.
So it'd be two or three more to Germany.
All right. I guess I'm maybe underestimating how far over that, how expansive that actually is.
It's ridiculous.
It is. Well, I agree. Question. I'm just trying to figure out, is it...
It's just the hog being greedy. I mean, they don't need to expand to Europe.
I mean, you've heard about games that were... I read about one that was scheduled to be played in China, but for some reason they couldn't get that off the ground. That's not really a goal of theirs because... I guess in China, those games are going on while everybody's asleep at night.
Well,
they assume that there isn't even an audience for it.
The reason about it is expanding the brand, obviously, and increasing the markets.
You've conquered America.
Right.
Just conquered it flat out. There's no more resources we can milk out of this country.
Probably not. I mean, how many cities that are dying for NFL football?
That don't have them?
That would be legitimately candidates for it.
Yeah, I think we asked this question a few weeks ago. We couldn't really come up with one.
I mean, San Antonio?
I mean, the last city that got one that really needed one is Houston, right?
Right.
They had one forever, went away for a little while, got the team back when they expanded.
Portland?
Yeah.
Versus internet. They just want international dollars, that's all.
Makes sense.
That's the reason behind it all.
And the Mexico City thing just seems to be like they're throwing a bone down there, right? I don't think.
No, I think Mexico City they're considering because of the travel being much more reasonable.
Right, but is there the money down there?
It's one of the largest cities in the world.
Isn't it poor?
Well, a lot of it is, but not all of it is.
Okay.
And they're not talking about any other cities in Mexico.
True.
Just Mexico City.
Well, it doesn't seem like it's going anywhere in the near future. I'm still going to be surprised, though, Graz, if they actually do move a team over there.
They're not going to.
I just don't see it.
No.
I mean, it's hard enough to get a team out of a city, right? Just in any sport. We've learned that lesson the hard way.
Well, it's not that hard, actually. You're wrong about that.
What do you mean?
Well, we've seen teams move all the time.
Yeah, we've seen it happen before, but it's not easy. With good cause. Well, what cause did Jacksonville have to move out of there?
Their owners got the freedom to do it. Their lease is up in their building. I mean, I'm just giving you all the reasons mm-hmm. they can be. It doesn't matter how well they're drawing. I mean, look at the Raiders. That wasn't very difficult to get them to move. Chargers wasn't very difficult to get them to move.
They have both of them have dilapidated stadiums. I can't really speak to what's going on in Jacksonville. I don't think that's that old, is it?
I guess by modern standards, probably is.
Well.
But it's all about the lease that you've got.
I suppose. Well, I hope it doesn't happen anytime
soon. I hope
soon.
It doesn't either.
Graz, as I mentioned before, we're dominating in picks. 9-1 in our last 10.
How about us?
But as they say, hogs get slaughtered.
Yeah, pigs eat. Pigs get fat.
Hogs get slaughtered. All right. If you think you're the one to slaughter us, give us a call right now, 206-421-3776. 3776, 866-979-3776. We're making the picks next.
You're listening to Bob Gross and Tom.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
You know what annoyed me on top of the Giants losing last night and playing terribly?
What's that?
When you have a bad game, the play-by-play guy and the color analyst, they have to go into sports talk radio mode on the air because they need something to talk about. Joe Buck and Troy Aikman
are terrible at it.
I don't really care for that.
I don't either.
Yeah. Sorry, the Fox theme there just kind of reminded me of that.
Agreed.
All right, we're making our picks. We still have a big payoff, so hang around at the end of the segment. We'll give you our question on that. But right now, let's say hi to our listener, the guy who's going to be picking against us here. That is Fred in Birch Bay. How you doing, Fred?
Oh, I haven't been better. What a treat to be on with you guys.
Appreciate it, Fred. You know the game's played, right?
I remember when the Groz came into town about, 1993, was it?
91, but not bad.
91. Yeah. No, you and Gasman. Yeah, legendary. Any rate, thank you for letting me on.
All right, Fred, you got it. Just hang on the line, and we're going to do our picks, and then you can make yours right afterwards, okay?
Sounds great.
All right, very good. Hang on a second.
Good pipes.
Yeah, he could do our job.
Yes, he could.
Well, maybe.
Well, Russ's job.
Whose job?
Russ's job.
He could do the promos?
Yeah, the announcer.
Well, we'll see how he does with his picks. Maybe he could do this job. All right, first game is going to be Pittsburgh, the up-and-down Pittsburgh Steelers, who I think are a lot better than the record shows so far, at the Cincinnati Bengals, who have been surprisingly good. Start with you, Groz.
Bengals are my Super Bowl sleeper, and the game's in Cincinnati.
It's
a rivalry game, and Pittsburgh's playing real well. I mean, this is a tough one.
It is a tough one. Only favored by a point and a half here, Cincinnati.
I'm going to go with Pittsburgh.
This will be telling about both teams.
Yeah, well,
we're kind of getting to that point in the season where the teams that have no shot are starting to fall out of it, and the teams that should hang around.
Pittsburgh needs it more.
They need it more. It's at Cincinnati, though. I think I want to go with Cincinnati. What do you think, Brian?
You're the tiebreaker.
I like Cincinnati.
You like
Pittsburgh's
Cincinnati?
A mess.
See him last week, Brian?
I like Cincinnati.
All right. Cincinnati it is.
I think what's happened with Pittsburgh is that they've gotten by just fine without Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, they
have.
This
kid Connor's been great.
And he's coming back anyway in a couple weeks.
All right, next game is the Los Angeles Chargers, favored by a point at the Browns. I guess I'm picking first here. I always like the Chargers. Always like Philip Rivers, thinks he's a little bit underrated. But will the Browns be the team that everybody thinks that they are? No, I'm taking the Chargers.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think the Browns are better than they've been, but the Chargers are a little bit better than they are.
If the Browns finish 6-10, that would be a miraculous improvement.
Well,
for
6-9-1.
Right. Good point. 6.5 wins.
I think they can do that.
I think they can, too. I think they're good enough to at least get close to that. But
this will be a tough game.
Yeah, taking the Chargers. All right, next game. Now, this is probably the game of the week in terms of figuring out
it's
who these teams
the
really
the
are.
Week.
Yeah, the Chiefs at the Patriots, who are favored by 3. Just your home standard points there.
Chiefs are the hunted for something. You know, by the way, the Patriots have been favored in the last 56 games under Tom Brady.
The last 56 games overall, huh?
Yeah.
Do you know when the last time they weren't was?
I don't. I just saw the headline on the story. I didn't look at the story. But that having been said, I'd like Kansas City to pull off the upset, even though they've shown some vulnerability.
Tell you what, I like Kansas City too. I'm not going to start doubting them if they lose. If the Patriots win this one, though, watch out, because that means that things are as they always are in the AFC.
Well, they got a little bit of a revenge factor. Didn't Kansas City blow their doors off? Was that last year?
It was about 3 years ago. It was a Monday night game in Kansas City. And that, you know what, Groz? That was the last time.
That might have been the last time the Patriots lost as a favorite.
It was on the road in Kansas City.
They still would have been favored.
Yeah, they probably, yeah. But that was the last time we looked where the Patriots had an early season slump and people pointed at him to say, oh, look, they're done. And they weren't.
We're both going Kansas City,
yeah. All right, the Rams, favored by 7, walking into Denver.
I heard you say earlier you were thinking about Denver. Are you still?
I still like Denver's defense at home. I liked them against Kansas City that night, and they very nearly pulled that one out. just to slow that, just to slow their offense down.
Yeah, but they've been playing like crap lately.
Yeah. No, I'm going with the Rams.
Good, me too.
I'm obsessed with the streak we're on at 9-1. Why mess with it?
Want to keep it going.
All right, so we'll go with the Rams there, and then finally the Seahawks and the Raiders.
On paper, the Seahawks. So we'll stick with paper. I think it's going to be a closer game than some people think. But the Raiders really aren't very good. And at the end of the day, that'll carry the Seahawks.
Yeah, I think you're right. On paper, the Seahawks, and in reality, the Seahawks. All right, let's go back out to our caller here. Fred, start with Pittsburgh at Cincinnati. What do you think?
Well, I like the Red Rifle. I mean, they're going to bungle it in some ways. I'm going to go with Big Ben. I think he's going to chime for us over in London. I think he's going to get where there's adversarial situations, a lot of time good comes out of it. Pittsburgh right now looks like they're on their head. I think they're going to win.
Could be. I'm kind of regretting that pick a little bit, but whatever. We'll move on. Chargers at the Browns. You believe in Baker Mayfield?
I do, but hey, if they win two in a row, they got momentum, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to pick the Browns.
Good for you. Hey, they were the one loss we had last week against, I think, a superior team in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
They played well. They're rising to the occasion.
Yeah. Kansas City at New England.
Anything to beat New England. On my gravestone, it's going to say Marshawn should have ran the ball. Beat New England.
Kansas City it is.
Kansas City.
All right. And then the obviously red-hot L.A. Rams at the Denver Broncos.
Boy, I'd love to see Denver rise to the occasion, but man, they're just for the heck of it, I'll say Denver.
Good for you. You know what? That defense, you never know. Von Miller at home.
Well, the young kids can't play that great forever. Probability says it's going to catch up to them.
I think their defense is going to catch up to them at some point, too. We'll see if Keenum's up to the
Amen.
Task. All right, and then the final game, the Seahawks at the Raiders in London.
Hey, you just listened to the offensive lineman this week. I think something happened last week that we haven't seen for a while. It's called belief. They believe in themselves. I think it's going to carry over. I think we're going to run for another 100-yard runner. I don't know who it's going to be, but Seahawks are going to win by at least 7, maybe 10.
Fred.
Great stuff, buddy.
Yeah, I don't know if you're going to win this week or not, but you did a tremendous job with analysis and giving picks on these games. So hang on, and Brian's going to get your number. We'll get all your contact info, and thanks for playing.
Hey, thank you.
All right.
Take care, you guys. Have a great
day. Okay, you too.
All right, so he's got a couple of picks that are different from us in there, so that should make that interesting. All right, let's switch gears here real quick, Graz. We're going to do the big payoff.
Baby.
Yep. For today's big payoff, it's your chance to win a pair of tickets to Endurocross, happening at the Angel of the Winds Arena on October 27th. Endurocross incorporates elements of extreme off-road racing into a supercross-style setting. Find tickets and info at angelofthewindsarena.com. Here is the question.
Okay.
What is the only country in the British Isles not represented in the Union Jack flag?
I knew that's what you were going to ask.
Yeah, you did.
It's solid.
You saw that coming a mile away.
Yes, I did.
All right.
If our listeners did.
What is the only country in the British Isles not represented in the Union Jack flag? If you know the answer to that one, give us a call, 206-421-3776, 866-979-3776. We sum it up next. I'm Bob Graus and Tom.
It's time to sum it up with Bob Graus and Tom. The final word every day on the show of record at 2:45.
All right, before we sum it up here, let's get to our winner of the big payoff. The big payoff, which is a pair of tickets to the Endurocross. Is it the Endurocross or just Endurocross, do you think?
Endurocross.
Endurocross, okay. Up at the Angel of the Winds Arena on October 27th, it's a mixture of road race, off-road racing, and a supercross-style setting. So find tickets and info at angelofthewindsarena.com. And my question was something I was asking you earlier in the show. The Union Jack flag of the UK, what is the only country in the British Isles that's not represented? The answer is?
Wales.
Why?
Because the Brits had just taken them over.
I'm not even sure that they had flags back then.
Oh, yeah, they had flags.
Did they have flags back then?
Sure they did.
And there was there's no need to incorporate it in your flag 400 years later or whatever,
when
they finally decided to make that thing, if you already own the country.
That's true.
Yeah.
The flag flew over a lot of countries.
Yes,
around the world. The sun never sets on the British Empire, Tom.
How are they doing today?
Not so well. World War II pretty much put an end to that.
Right. Like, they got out okay, but the beginning of that didn't go too well.
No. It's just that before World War II, the British Empire still extended to India and across much of the world, Indonesia. And then by 10 years after World War II, it had shrunk.
Is it just because
India got their independence? Well, they weren't as powerful.
Right.
The U.S. was the power, the premier power. The U.S. was colonial for a while, but they weren't at that point. And it was just the end of colonial rule.
So technically, because they don't rule over Scotland right now, do they?
Well, it's part of UK.
It's part of UK, but that flag, it represents Scotland, Ireland, England.
Right.
But it's really, we associate that flag with England.
Correct.
Mostly. We don't associate it with Scotland.
Well, Scotland's part of England. So is Wales. Ireland is not. Ireland's a separate country.
I'd be uncomfortable with that if I were a Scotsman.
A lot of them are.
A lot of them. They have been ever since.
There's been an independence movement going on there. Since Mel Gibson.
Yeah, since William Wallace. Anyway, congrats to Dylan in Tacoma, who's going to be going to see Endurocross. And that sounds like a lot of fun. So what are you looking forward to most this weekend, Grouse, of the three things that are going on? We got the baseball playoffs, we got the UW-Oregon game, and we have the Seahawk game on Sunday.
I'll be brutally honest as always, Tom. I'm looking forward to the Husky game first. Looking forward to the baseball playoffs second, and the Seahawks game third.
Is there any chance that's a blowout, the Washington game?
Sure, could go. There's a chance it could be a blowout either way.
Either way, I'm not talking like 70-20. I'm talking forty to twenty. That type of.
There's
thing.
No chance of that, but there's pretty much. I'd say that we say that in the NFL, a blowout really is a double digit win. You can argue that that's a blowout in the NFL because there aren't that many games that are.
Sometimes it depends on how you get there, but
sure,
roughly, yeah.
Sure. In college football, it probably requires three touchdowns, probably a 21-point win. So I would say. So I would say that that's not likely, but it's possible that either side could win by that amount of points.
Yeah, I think that that's probably fair. I actually am kind of feeling Oregon in this one.
A lot of people are. A lot of people are. I mean, they're coming into it with a lot of momentum.
They're
playing well.
Factor.
They got a good quarterback. They've got a great offense. Washington's defense showed some, I'm not going to say disturbing signs, but showed some holes last week.
Do you think their defense?
And in the old days, great defense would beat a good offense. That's not true anymore.
In college.
In any brand of football, the pendulum has swung to offense more than anything. I mean, everyone's playing offense now. Alabama's quarterback is probably the best player in the country.
That's true.
Alabama's core, and not because he's running the wishbone.
If it were, we'll take the Super Bowl, though, a couple of years ago, Seahawks-Broncos. They were talking about that on the broadcast last night, too. That was a classic case of a historically great offense going in there. Everybody expected them to just run all over the field, and the great defense went in there and handled them easily.
Yep.
Now, this isn't a Super Bowl, necessarily. It's not a playoff game. But I think I would still take the defense, just in a vacuum on paper, I would still take the great defense against the good offense.
I think it's in particular tough in college because of the spread and all the plays that are run, but I don't expect it to be a blowout, but it could be.
Hmm.
I like Washington by a little bit, unless I think it's going to be a great game.
Yeah.
I'm interested in the baseball playoffs, too. I think Houston-Boston is going to be a fantastic series. I think if Milwaukee gets game one tonight against the Dodgers, all bets are off in that series.
You know, Milwaukee's another one. I told you a couple weeks ago when the Rockies were kind of ramping up to that one-game playoff, I told you guys that I still think of the Rockies as an expansion team. I still think of the Brewers as an American League team.
Sure.
And the Astros as a National League
team.
Right? That just doesn't feel right. I felt like when the Astros moved over here, they should have moved the Brewers back. It just sort of, that just feels right to me. So watching them on opposite sides of this LCS, it's a little confusing.
It's weird seeing the Astros win the American League championship.
Right, they feel like a classic National League team. You think of all the guys who have played there, like Jose Cruz. I remember I had 800 of his baseball cards.
Of course.
A National League team that I never really got to watch when I was a kid until they were in the postseason.
And I think the Seahawks are going to win fairly easily in a game that's going to be ugly.
Like not worth watching after the first two quarters, that type of ugly?
Just ugly penalties.
Okay, so they may slog problems. It out.
I think they're just going to slog it out, yeah.
24-10, that type of thing.
20-10, 20-13, something like that.
Maybe even something like last night.
That would be fine.
Yeah. I mean, 31 to 30.
I mean, I don't know where the Raiders are at headwise and where they're where they're at mentally, because they played poorly this year.
Mm-hmm.
They've had what they've struck me as, unlike the Giants last night, who were bad from the beginning, is the Raiders seem like a team that can play good for a couple of quarters and then fall apart.
Maybe.
Or don't play well or whatever.
Carr can move a little bit.
Carr's still a player. Marshawn Lynch is going to run the ball a lot.
Yeah.
There'll be some fun with that, but it's going to be dreary, rainy.
You know, you mentioned before, you mentioned the Yankee fans tend to be the same people as Giant fans. This has been a bad week for those people. Yankees get eliminated.
Yep.
Right? And there's all the controversy there. Was it a failure of a season, etc.? And then the cherry on top, last night's just hideous game. And
yeah,
you know,
the Giants.
And that wasn't just that game or this season. This organization really needs to look itself in the mirror.
I saw the Twitter picture. They showed the picture of the guys in the boat before the playoff game. Since then, the Giants are 4-19.
4-19.
That's about as bad as it gets.
Can you imagine if we had to cover a 4-19 Seahawk team? Good Lord.
We don't.
All right, Groz, it's been a pleasure.
Been fun, Tommy Gunn.
Go Seahawks. Someday you and I will make it to London as well, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do a show over there or something. I don't
Why
know.
Why not? You did a show in Ireland.
I've been to Dublin twice.
Yeah.
It was a...
Doing shows.
Yeah, it was pretty nuts over there, I got to say. Not as much as you'd think, though, especially on St. Patrick's Day. Eerily quiet, actually. All right, Bob Groz and Tom, Danny, Dave, and Moore are next.